Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. My name is Dave Stevens. I'm a B2B marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. And today we've got well over 1,000 participants across the world. If, though, this is the first time you've joined us, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. If you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's good to have you along again. In this episode, I'll be speaking to marketing consultant Doug Marshall to help us navigate the debate between long-term planning and agile. Plus, co-host of the product group, Asomi Ithia, talks about the marketing skills we need. And founder and managing director of Grist, Andrew Rogerson, discusses change in business marketing. I've spent so much of my career trying to persuade the marketing teams I work with to build a marketing plan before they dive in. But now it turns out I'm a marketing dinosaur, for agile marketing is the future, a discipline that challenges the need for starting with a plan. Here to help us navigate the debate between planning and agile is marketing consultant and MD of Achieve B2B Marketing, Doug Marshall. Doug, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Dave.
It's good to see you. So before we dive into agile versus plan, tell us a bit about what Achieve B2B Marketing does.
Yeah, well, I launched Achieve B2B Marketing this year to help information and learning companies make better marketing decisions and to help them grow.
Okay, very good. So that means I reckon you're in a good place to be able to answer the question, agile or plan?
Well, Dave, I don't think it has to be a decision because I think both have merit. So sorry not to provoke a big controversial argument over it. I'm a big fan of agile. I think agile does help marketing teams have good focus, have good urgency, and have ongoing assessment of what they're actually trying to achieve. But as Mike Tyson said once, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. So even with good planning, you still need to be agile and you still need to be flexible. But I do think there are some things you can't do short term. And that's why I think it's good to have a 12-month plan.
Okay, so what would you say are the benefits of a long-term planning approach?
I think it really... I will give you some examples of areas that need long-term planning. For example, with marketing technology, if you're investing in marketing technology, you know it's a long-term commitment. There's a lot of investment that's going to take place when you're actually doing marketing technology. So you really need to think about that as a long-term plan. How are you going to roll it out? What skills are you going to need? So any kind of marketing technology needs that long-term planning. I also think when it comes to skills, you need to think about skills long term. And I would say advise anyone who's doing a marketing plan to do a skills audit of their marketing team. Really have a think about what's actually changed in the last 12 months, that we have to think about what skills do we actually need to have in the next 12 months we didn't have in the last year. And then you might think, okay, do we need to develop those skills in-house? Do we need to hire new people in, or do we need to outsource that? And again, I think that really needs sort of a long-term mindset. I would also say about product decisions. I think marketing people should get involved in product decisions as much as possible. And I remember years ago, I was became marketing manager of this business that had lots of different products and brands in the business. And I created a life cycle graph and plotted where each of those products were on that life cycle graph, where they were introduction, growth, maturity or decline. And it really helped the business understand what we needed to do with each of those products, whether they needed investment, perhaps even if we need to divest them, and it actually what areas perhaps we actually needed to make acquisitions. So I think, again, that's long term. Two further things I would say. Pricing, encourage all marketers to get involved in pricing decisions. I help a lot of learning and information companies, and training in particular, some training companies in the past, they thought of training as being on a cost plus basis. And actually that's where marketers can get involved and think about, well, what's the value of the product and how can you adjust the pricing accordingly so it's the right price? And lastly, I've just mentioned budget. You know, if you're presenting a budget to your CFO, your CEO, your sales director, you need to have done your homework, and you need to have done your homework for a full 12 months. A great bit of advice I once had was, it's always best to be a hero at the end of the financial year rather than at the beginning of the financial year. So when you're planning, really make sure you understand your numbers, really make sure you're thinking through, if you're being asked to achieve stretching targets, to know, well, can you achieve those stretching targets? How can you achieve those stretching targets and be able to present them credibly and confidently? But it's not just about managing expectations. It's also about understanding the opportunity. So if you're putting together a budget for your plan, think about what's happened in the market. Think about what internal improvements have been made that can actually allow you to have a stretching target rather than just about thinking about year-on-year growth.
There's some great advice there. And I wonder whether you can help me understand which businesses you could kind of name check that do this well right now.
One company, again, in the learning space that I think has done this really well is FutureLearn. And FutureLearn was an offshoot of the Open University a few years ago. And they really spotted the trend in online learning well before COVID-19, and the good market research was understanding the benefits of online learning. And they did some things were a little ahead of their time. They did a freemium service. They introduced social learning. They saw that trend where actually when people were learning, they wanted to actually do that in a very social way online by having online conversations. And they did subscription models, which, you know, these days online learning companies are doing, but they did it in such a way that you have a trial and then you can cancel at any time. I also went to an event of theirs last year, the Future of Learning Festival, and what it showed me is they were really creating a community of learners, both users and also other people that were putting learning courses onto their platform. So I think that was a good example of bringing their community together.
So if I'm listening to this and I haven't really got much in the way of kind of long-term planning together, but I've liked what I've heard, how do I get started?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the first thing you need to do is to understand what the business goals are of the company, because you need to align your marketing plan with the business goals of the company. It's really important to be collaborative. You're going to be presenting a budget and your plan, maybe to your CEO, to your CFO, and your sales director. So it's important to have good communication with the C-suite and other stakeholders to make sure you really understand what they're going to be looking for from a marketing plan, so there are no big surprises when you're presenting your marketing plan. I think also structure is an important thing to think about. I quite like the SOSTAC marketing structure devised by PR Smith, and that presents a nice, simple to understand structure. So it's all about a situation analysis. It's about putting together smart objectives. That leads to having a strategy which enables you to achieve those smart objectives. And then there's your tactics and your actions. And finally, your control, how you're actually monitoring your marketing plan. So all this really enables you yourself as a marketer, you're better prepared to achieve your targets. And also it enables you to be much more strategic, not just thinking about the tactics. And for me, what that's all about is helping you to understand where you are now, where you're going, and how you're going to get there.
Doug Marshall, MD of Achieve B2B Marketing. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave.
Building yourself a career in business marketing can be tough, particularly in the light of the COVID crisis. I'm joined by Isomi Ithia, Senior Product Professional, author, mentor, and co-host of The Product Group, for some advice on surviving and thriving, but from a very different perspective. Isomi, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Dave. It's really good to be on the BMC podcast.
Great to see you, mate. So before we dive in, tell us a bit about The Product Group.
So The Product Group is a monthly meetup. It's designed around people who are interested in product management. So not only pure play product managers. We have it's a discussion led format. We split our event into two halves. It's not too dissimilar to the BMC. In that we have a topic of the night that we will discuss. Everybody contributes to the topic of the night. We have a guest speaker. The guest speaker is not allowed to bring any slides. They basically intro themselves, and then everyone who's in attendance, and we're talking circa 100 plus per event, fires their questions at them. It's so, like I say, it's discussion led. It's typically product, UX, engineering, people. Sometimes we get marketers. We'd love to see more marketers attend. So you're welcome to come.
And product professionals are welcome to the BMC and vice versa. I would say we're kind of neighbours, aren't we, really, in the sense that the product group is kind of the BMC for product people.
Absolutely.
Then from the perspective, Isomi, of a product professional, what skills and qualities do you look for in a good marketing colleague?
So it's probably a few. Top, or one of the main ones, I'd say, is a focus on the customer. And I kind of think of that as one way of describing it is people who think from an outside in rather than an inside out. And that kind of boils down to focus on what the customer needs over personal opinions and personal views of the world, and engaging in customers to the extent that it's actually, you know what, the best way to get the answer to this is to put it in front of a customer, is to talk to a customer rather than second guessing what we think customers want or need. I also think, and this is probably a two-way thing, curiosity about the product, wanting to know about the product, asking lots of questions, and keep, you know, being keen to get the backstory. Why is the product being created? What's the problem that it's solving? And that, I mean, at one level, outside of the fact that from a marketer's perspective, it means that they're fully aware of what's going on, it also kind of demonstrates a level of interest and a level of engagement in the product and making sure the product is successful. I'd also say, and purely from a marketing perspective, is that a deep understanding of marketing. And obviously deepness depends on maturity in terms of career and how long, but a deep understanding and or interest in marketing, right away from message creation through to various different promotional tools, etc., that might be used. And kind of tied into that is a thought around being an advisor. Now, it depends on how the product and the marketing relationship are set up. But if it's and I kind of think of it from a product being a bit of the lead in this scenario, it's kind of, and a product person being involved in multiple aspects of it, it's being able to advise on, I product person shouldn't need to be and don't need to be expert. That's why the marketing people are there. It's being able to come in and say, okay, I think we should do this. I think we should do that. I think, the thing we need to understand about the product is, what are the core capabilities? What are the core things that it helps customers do? And then using that to then build out a message. Moving along stream, I also think things like, and I know probably data-driven is overused, but it's right from the beginning of understanding and thinking about what's possible with different tools or avenues, and kind of molding that into a model that says, if we do X, I think we're going to get Y back. And then further down the line, after that thing has been completed and implemented, it's then using that data and that insight to help make the next decision about, so where do we go? Is it that we can do in one thing because it didn't produce the results, or the cost per the acquisition cost was too high, etc. So it's kind of at that level. And then relationship building, being really good at engaging with and communicating and collaborating with product people, I think is really important.
So there's quite a list there. So
I don't ask for much.
Would you say that one of those is more important than the others?
Can I be cheeky and take two?
Oh, go on, just this one.
So I think the two I would pick is definitely the relationship building, the collaboration piece, because it's human interactions that help things go along well. And then I think the other side is the customer part. So if there's one thing that product, and we can argue the case as to whether everyone delivers this or not, product is really grounded in is the focus on the customer. It's a fundamental part of that. So working with people who see that same view of the world helps everyone. And I don't think product people are wrong in going around and saying that, look, it's all about the customer. We have to understand the customer. We have to understand the customer. Okay. So I'd put those two.
So taking those two then, how would you recommend the people listening to this podcast thinking, oh, okay, that's the sort of skill set I need to build. How can they go about acquiring those skills?
I think that the first and the easiest way is by doing, being involved in doing it, almost practicing it. I remember a previous mentor of mine who talked about their best way of developing the people they work with is to give them tasks.
Right.
So rather than I think you should do ABC and go off and let's talk about it, it's like, well, actually, let me give you a task that's going to stretch you and help you develop those skills. So doing it and getting involved in it is probably my primary one. I guess some of that as well is around trying different things. So if it's the customer focus piece, is okay, how can I, and what questions might I ask of the product person or in the market to understand more about my customers? So it's the practical practicing of that. Again, similarly, when we talk about the relationship building, the communication piece, it's the doing. Now, one of the things I like to think of, and I've used this with teams in the past, is in a job role, if you need to develop a skill, you can always develop that skill by understanding you need to develop it, finding a way to do it in your job, or creating a scenario within your role where you can develop that skill. So let me give you a super simple example. One of my team members in the past needed to develop presentation skills. So could have sent them on a presentation course. Instead of sending them on a presentation course, got them to do a presentation in front of a team. So they were able to develop that skill. Another part of developing skills that I always go by is almost like I call it the skills gap analysis. So it's the, here's where I am today. Here's where I want to be. And here's the skills that I think I need to learn. Where am I today? Almost mark myself against the things I need to develop, and then work on, in some kind of priority order, work on working through developing each of those new skills. And then, of course, I should not forget going to meetups where you're going to meet people and be able to talk through different things, test ideas, learn from them, etc. I think is really good. And reading, because I forgot I have written some books on product management.
Yeah, but absolutely. I have them in my library, actually. They're worth a flick. So before we go, and we'll have to be kind of quick on this one from a time perspective, but just to kind of reciprocate, what skills do product people need to have in order to best work with marketers?
So I think it's all of the above. It's the same skill set. The additional thing that I would add to that is, and it actually, this is both ways, but I'm talking from a product perspective, is an understanding and appreciation of marketing. And an understanding and appreciation of, even if it's just the basics of marketing. So when walking into a conversation, it's not a teach me about marketing, I've no idea. It's a let's have a fruitful conversation because I have a base understanding. I understand what it is, I understand some of the constraints that might exist within, well, definitely exist in every world, right? I understand some of the constraints and I can have a more fruitful conversation off the back of that.
Somi Ifia, co-host of the Product Group. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're living in a world of uncertainty with COVID-19, recession and political and social conflict dominating our lives. That calls for us to do business marketing differently now and in the future. In our show and tell series, we're hearing from client side and agency side marketers in businesses from startup all the way up to mature corporates about topics ranging from changes in working practices to changes in purpose and culture, changes in brand, in marketing strategy, in messages and channels. They'll be sharing experiences and offering advice. Today, it's the turn of founder and managing director of Grist, Andrew Rogerson. Andrew, welcome to the podcast and over to you.
Thank you very much, Steve. Yes, the world is indeed different to what it was just 12 months ago. I don't think anyone would doubt that. But the question for the business marketing community is, what does that mean? And what can you actually do about it? In the next 5 minutes or so, I will talk about these changing client requirements, the importance of thought leadership, and in an age of digital saturation, how you can cut through the noise and get your message out there. Firstly, then, let's look at client requirements. Through our annual Value of B2B Thought Leadership research, which surveys over 500 senior executives at enterprise level firms worldwide, we can see that client requirements are changing. Back in 2018, well before the pandemic, senior executives were looking for help to give them the edge over competitors and to keep them informed of emerging trends. But at the tail end of 2020, those objectives had hardened to something much more practical and pragmatic. Senior executives wanted help to make better business decisions and to understand best practice. The attention of the C-suite has now also shifted to the near future, which we define as the next 3 to 12 months. That's not the immediate future, and maybe corporates have moved beyond those pressing sales, cash flow, and furlough problems, and have started to look at issues such as what their organizational structure might look like as we come out of the pandemic, or indeed learn to live with it. Senior executives are also leaning on external support for this help. They do not believe that the expertise they are looking for is in-house, nor with their competitors. Neither have probably lived through anything like this before. This is most likely evidenced by the fact that the views of advisors have now replaced the views of peers in the top three sources the C-suite turn to for advice. And this would chime with other surveys, such as Grant Thornton's recent Global Business Pulse, which revealed that more than a fifth of the professional services firms they spoke to anticipated that they had delivered more work and therefore increased revenues in 2020 during the pandemic. And 7% had actually anticipated an increasing of 10% or more. That would actually make professional services one of the top three performing sectors during the pandemic, along with TMT and oil and gas. So what do the C-suite look for when assessing a new advisor? A full 91%, 9 in 10 of the senior executives we surveyed for this research, believe that thought leadership is either critical or important to their decision-making when appointing new advisors. And roughly speaking, that's 50-50. Around 40% of the senior executives we surveyed said it was critical, and 51% said it was important. And there's a wonderful quote from Jeff Ernst, previously principal analyst at Forrester Research, which backs this up. He says, business buyers don't buy your product or service. They buy into your perspective and approach to solving their problems. I thought that was wonderful. Senior executives are also reading more thought leadership now than they did before the pandemic started. Nearly half of those we talked to, around about 45%, are either reading a lot more or a little more, and roughly a third are reading the same. So consumption's gone up. This would also tally with broader media trends as we all seek advice on what is going on. Media scoring agencies such as ComScore, for instance, revealed that levels of business media, actually any media consumption, went up by around about 50% in April as the pandemic kicked off. That's tailed off slightly, but was still over 30% more in August and is staying that way. So not producing thought leadership simply isn't an option. You need to think about how you can make your thought leadership different and better than the competition. So how do you do this? Senior executives want thought leadership tailored to their needs, and in particular, they want it tailored to their sector. Given the choice, some 71% prefer a sector focus to a pan-sector focus. But the majority of people we spoke to also want their thought leadership and content tailored to their job role, company size, and/or region. And obviously, this has massive implications for how we plan and personalize the thought leadership we create. How senior executives consume thought leadership is also changing in the age of Zoom. Without face-to-face events, the C-suite are looking for personal and engaging formats, such as video, personal presentations, and online events, which include a networking element. We've also seen a genuine appetite for interactive maps, for benchmarking tools, and for scrolling stories. But it's not a simple case of choosing what's most popular. Formats and channels are increasingly blurred. Integrated campaigns, which include a variety of these formats, are much more likely to be successful. It's also worth noting, slightly tongue-in-cheek given what we're doing today, that podcasts came bottom of the list of preferred formats for the C-suite, which we actually put down to reduced listening opportunities on the traditional compute. It'll therefore be pretty interesting to see the figures for this podcast. And finally, four recommendations for your own thought leadership. One, review your current thought leadership portfolio. And remember that thought leadership that does not address today's problems may have a more detrimental effect on your brand than no thought leadership at all. Two, focus your thought leadership on areas where you can genuinely make a difference, not just in the immediate future, but going forward. Focus on your clients more than you ever have and provide genuine value to them. Three, things will change, so plan for an ongoing dialogue. The problems that you're helping clients to solve are continuous. Use your content program to work in tandem with your clients to solve them. And finally, four, focus on formats and channels that genuinely work. We've outlined some of these in terms of what the C-suite currently wants in our recent research report, but that's no substitute for continual testing and refinement. Thanks very much.
Andrew Rogerson, founder and managing director of Grist. Thank you very much. And that's all. That's it for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guests, Doug Marshall, Asomi Ithia and Andrew Rogerson. And thanks to our technical team from Through the Eye of Scott Jackson, Andrew Gratian, Alex Horn and Josh Bench. Most of all, though, thanks to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. There's more where this came from. Just go to businessmarketingclub.org.uk. But that's it for now. I hope to see you again. Thanks for listening.